I believe leaders are made in the wild or formed in the wild. We take whatever we have right now and we work with it and we form something better. And then the wild can be anything. It could be the bush of Alaska, which is right outside my door here. Or the wild could be a business office.
Welcome to Upon Arrival, a show that uncovers stories and strategies that make up all the moving parts of business events tourism with me, Adelaine Ng. There's something to be said about being removed from your usual environment, becoming untethered, if you like, to address some of the most important questions that have been quietly nagging at you for years. But when that untethering experience involves wild bears in Alaska or the eagle hunters of Mongolia, that's a whole other level, which could be a great idea for an ultimate incentive or team-building trip with a transformational result. Mike Green believes you'll never discover the truth about yourself behind a desk, but in the rugged wilderness of Alaska or the breathtaking plains of the Serengeti or in the stunning Gobi Desert. These wild environments, he says, challenge us to become the best version of ourselves by tapping into the courage within us to achieve new levels of performance. I gotta admit, when I first came across Mike's bio, he sounded a bit like a cross between Bear Grylls and Tony Robbins. One of his early major milestones began with an epic journey hitchhiking from New York to Alaska, relying only on the kindness of strangers. I was totally intrigued. Mike, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, you've done amazing things, but let's start with that story. What made you decide hitchhiking to Alaska with no money was a good idea?
Thank you. But I was working as a school teacher in my hometown of Western New York, 10th grade global history. And I started doing these life lessons on Fridays about all the things I believe that these 10th graders needed to know in order to be successful in life. And one day at the start of 24-hour news networks, this is way back in 2000, we were just getting influenced by all the negative press about everything from something taking place to far end of our country down in Texas, because I grew up in Western New York, we would believe that it would happen to us. And it started to affect my students' decisions on this basic question. I said, if you were to get a flat tire in your car and you were out of self-service, now this time self-service was just starting to happen. And then not every kid had a cell phone. In fact, I only just got one. I said, if you were broken down the side of the road and somebody came to help you, would you help them 100%, like be right there with them, change the tires, et cetera? Or would you lock yourself in the car and wait for a law enforcement officer to come help you or somebody you knew? Or would you go outside the car but be far away enough that if they tried something on you, you could run away? Well, the answer was basically 85%, no one would work close to hand with this person. They would not be working shoulder to shoulder with them. And then I said, well, why is that? They really didn't have an answer. So what I told them to do is I go home, look at your newspaper, and mark all the articles for positive or negative, even the wedding announcements. Well, they came back, and guess what? 85% of what they had in the newspaper was negative. So I asked them, why is it that you would not support this individual to try to help you? You wouldn't be working shoulder to shoulder with this person. And they came to the conclusion that media does have an effect on us. Again, remind you, this is the year 2000. And out of a sudden, I had an out-of-body experience, and I said to my students, well, to prove that you can believe in the kindness of others, I'm going to hitchhike from Western New York to Alaska with no money or no food. And I'm looking down on myself during this thing going, what did you just say? I mean, what? You're going to do what? And then the second thing that happened, this is God's honest truth, I go, oh boy, I'm in big trouble now, because now these kids think you can hitchhike anywhere. And I could just see the teachers and the principal. And I got flack from the principal and the teachers. And I even got called into the police station to the chief of police, because his son was in my classroom at the time, saying, you know, you shouldn't be telling kids to hitchhike and this stuff. Well, anyway, another interesting thing is about 85% of the people were told me that I would end up dead in the ditch, raped dead in the ditch. I always ended up dead in the ditch, which was really interesting. So now that I set this story up, I literally left my hometown in Western New York, hitchhiked all the way across the North American continent to Alaska, and relying on the kindness of others. So some people say, well, what, you didn't take any money? I go, I did not take any money, absolutely not. Not even a credit card in my shoe or nothing. So what did I do to get across when I was hungry? Well, I would go to a restaurant that was family-owned. It wasn't like a restaurant chain. I go ask to see the owner or the manager. And they say, well, I'm the manager or I'm the owner. And I would say, well, my name's Mike Green. I noticed as I was walking by that you had some cigarette butts and trash in your parking lot. If you give me a bag and I'll clean it up for a half hour if you just give me a sandwich. And they get really uncomfortable. Like, no, we don't do that, but we'll just give you something to get you on your way. And I was like, no, I'm sorry. I can't take that. And they were like, get even more uncomfortable. They said, I need to work for it. So eventually, with all the eyes on everybody within hearing distance, because they all looked at me like, who's this guy with a big backpack on? Now, mind you, I was clean shaven, et cetera. I didn't smell. I wasn't dirty in any way. And I ultimately went outside with a trash bag and made my way to clean up. And then when I would come in, they'd always have a four-course meal. And then most of the time, they gave me a to-go container.
Wow, that's amazing. So you basically did this journey kind of without any safety net because you mm-hmm. wanted to prove a point.
True. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you always been like that?
Well, I was always somebody who necessarily didn't follow the crowd, right? They didn't take all the courses because everybody else was. I didn't take all the exams like everybody else just because I would refuse to be, you know, categorized, if you will. And when I hitchhiked across, you know, I had a tent and things like that. So to answer your question, sometimes, but I don't know, again, I didn't know where this came from. It was like as Stephen Pressfield, the author, the awesome author that he is, he believes in muse and that we have an idea within us that sometimes if we really get close to it, it supports our internal growth, much like the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell's work, right? So if you allow yourself to be in service of others, strange things happen, like an out-of-body experience where you say, yeah, I'm going to hitchhike about 5,300 miles across the continent and then up through desolation, by the way.
I guess this is why you're so interesting to me, because everywhere else I get told that our brains are ancient, meaning mm-hmm. it's trying to fight really hard to keep us safe, and that makes mm-hmm. us not want to try adventurous things. True. I know you're trying to pull us in the other direction, the direction that we need to go into for personal growth, and mm-hmm. that impacts business, it impacts our family life. You know, it gives us returns in so many ways. It's just that matter of how brave are we, or mm-hmm. How much do we want that transformation? So it doesn't sound like you have that, you know, that ancient brain part that's holding you back too much.
Well, my mother would agree with you wholeheartedly. I would say that I understand that there's perceived risk. And yes, hitchhiking across America in the North American continent is dangerous. And you have to have your wits about you. There's rides I didn't accept because of that reason, right? So it was being aware. But inside that growth where you now small incremental steps of growth or danger well-established can really make a lot of growth for people. The small incremental steps. I happen to, out of nowhere, just say I'm going to do this huge thing. And it literally did take a ride-by-ride, small incremental steps to be successful.
And it must have been an amazing trip because you decided to stay in Alaska. Alaska must have been good.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. I've been to 63 countries. I've worked on all seven continents. And my book talks about how I discovered a leadership truth on every continent. So Alaska, this whole story of me going through North America, the leadership truth that I learned was courage and the courage to take the first step out of a very safe place, my hometown, and then also courage to accept the kindness of others. So it took me 9.5 days of hitchhiking to get to Alaska. Now, I gave up all control. I just had a sign that said north on one side and west on the other. In fact, I still have that sign. One of my students made it for me. And it took 37 rides. And I recorded almost all of those conversations with what we would call a mini disc. So again, I'm dating myself, right? The mini disc. I had a little recording. I had a little microphone and I didn't tell anybody that I was recording him. And I would turn it on and turn it off once the conversation got great. So it was an amazing experience. And it taught me a lot of things and also taught my students. And I still go back to my hometown. Now those students are far older. They just thank you. They thank me so much for the idea that people, most people are kind and want to support your journey or support you in some way.
So I guess the question about coaching, it sounds like quite natural that you've gone through this transformation yourself. You saw what it did for yourself, and then you saw how you've started to inspire students from the journey that you yourself have gone through. So it's really interesting because you now do this at a high level and you're taking on business people who are C-suite, you know, and people who are ready for that big bite, because working with you is not a one-off thing. People tend to, in my world, think of coaching as short-term, you know, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, at the most, maybe 2 months. You hop in and out maybe, and it's done with, apart from a cost out of your pocket, there's not a lot of risk or outlay. But with you, they actually have to commit to quite a bit more, including things like leaving your cell phone behind, no communication with your family, and committing to what is an adventure where you don't even really know what that adventure is going to look like or what you're going to discover about yourself. So if you can tell us a little bit about how that works.
Well, I work with people face-to-face, Zoom, or they come to Alaska to do what I call Alaska Leadership Adventure, or I meet them somewhere in the world that they've always wanted to go. It's basically what I call adventure coaching. And whether it be in the Wadi Rum of the Jordan, or going to Petra, or going to the castles of Scotland, or the tobacco fields of Nicaragua, or the Inca Trail in Peru, I work with people in that. So high level, I have coaching engagements up to 9 months. That's my minimum, 9 month minimum, where people come to me where they have something that they want to work on, or they want to achieve, or they want less of. Let's just say, for sake of conversation, I have a client. He was a travel nurse, and he was not happy in his, as we call, station in life. He was overweight, overworked, had no girlfriend, and in debt. And he knew something needed to change, and he knew he couldn't do it himself. So he hired me to support him and getting control of his life. We'll just say it that way. Well, I worked with him and he goes, well, 9 months, that seems like a long time. I said, well, I'm going to tell you what normally happens. Normally we start working together and in about 2 to 3 months, you start to see a major change. And then all of a sudden things happen very quickly and you find yourself achieving those goals. And then some, because of the way I coach you and you learn how to self-adjust, if you will, or self-coach. And then by 9 months, you've got so many great opportunities. Girlfriend, he made his own schedule. He was well on his way to getting out of debt very quickly. And he had the lifestyle that he wanted, where he worked 1 week at the end of the month and the 1 week at the beginning of the month, and he can go off hunting or do all the things he wanted to do. So that's an example of that. Now, when they come to Alaska, they have that capstone experience where they have something that they just want to work through. I call it sometimes an intention. I had a client here just recently in Alaska. She's a doctor, a research scientist. She just wanted to be settled in her decision to leave the past chapter behind. She wanted to leave that chapter of building a very successful company and then leaving that well so that she could arrive well into the next chapter, right? Because you need to, my belief is that in order to arrive well into the next chapter, you have to leave well that chapter, in my opinion, or at least put it behind you and say, okay, I learned all these lessons, let's move forward. Now, my tagline is, I believe leaders are made in the wild or formed in the wild. Well, leaders, anybody who leads, you lead in relationships with our family members, our loved ones, our coworkers, et cetera. Formed, we take whatever we have right now and we work with it and we form something better or something less than painful or more joy or more self-worth, if you will, for those people who have that imposter syndrome, if you will. And then the wild can be anything. It could be the bush of Alaska, which is right outside my door here. I'm in Alaska right now in a log cabin that was built in 1958. Or the wild could be a business office. It could be in the boardroom. It could be in a conversation, a crucial conversation with a coworker that you really didn't have the tools necessary to work through the angst that you have. So that's what it looks like working with me. Some of my clients love to start with me and then say, okay, 4 months into it, they go, I want to come to Alaska in the spring. Okay, great. Well, we'll do that. We'll just continue working together on this trajectory. And then Alaska will be an experience that even Alaska or say the adventure coaching in, we'll say Petra, if you will, that becomes such a powerful experience and an anchor of I can do this. And then that epiphany or aha moment or that no more will I do this is anchored in that strength of awe of being in Petra. I mean, it's an amazing, amazing place. Or Wadi Rum, it's just incredible. Something right out of Lawrence of Arabia. How could you not be in awe there, right? So that's what I do.
What is it about the wild, though, you think, that sort of facilitates that transformation?
Yeah. Well, one of my great friends said to me that nature kills pretense, right? So you think you're going to be able to do this and nature teaches you something different, right? All of a sudden, when the wind comes up or there's a rainstorm coming, you got to be prepared. I think what happens with the wild is we don't have our cell phones. We don't have that anchor of, I need stimuli. It doesn't work. Sometimes I tell my clients, don't even bring your phone, buy a camera, or you can borrow mine. We don't have that stimulization. Guess what happens? We have to be with ourselves. And that to people is really, really scary because that naysayer voice in the back of their head can easily say, you can't climb to the top of that mountain. You're going to be miserable out here. You don't even know if there's a bear behind that bush or that bush over there. You're going to get eaten by wolves, all these crazy things. Well, guess what? There is no escape from your own mind when you don't have any stimuli that you've been used to. I'm bored. So what do? You grab your phone. You look at a TikTok video, or I'm going to reread an email that gives me praise. Or I'm going to delete the things I don't want to see on my phone, right? So when you're out there, you're dealing with the current situation and you're taking stock. So I put you in situations safely where I say, we're going to climb that mountain today. And you're going to go, there's no way I can do that. I said, well, let's just take it step by step. And so begins the metaphor of the day or of that experience. So you and I, we hike up to a mountain. Top of the mountain, and you're up there, your exhilaration is like, wow, that was awesome. I can't believe I did it. I say, okay, well, let's get a couple of pictures before that rain comes in, then we get down the mountain safely. And then at the end of the night, around a warm fire or inside a nice warm cabin, I'll say to you, so earlier today, you felt that you couldn't do that. You did. So is there anything else in your life that you feel like you can't do? And how can we relate today's powerful experience towards overcoming that self-induced perception of, I can't do that? And that's a basic foundation of what I do. Some people say, well, yeah, okay, that makes sense. So I can do that anywhere. Well, yeah, well, I've got over 11,000 hours documented. And I'm a master certified coach with the International Coach Federation. There's no better organization in the world or on the planet. And I'm one of 1,400 people that have that level. So that's what makes it even more powerful because I am so comfortable in the outdoors, so easily comfortable that I support you because I've been doing it for years and 30 years out in the bush, out different parts of the whole world.
And I guess that's also where people can park that ancient brain.
Exactly.
You know, because they feel a little bit more safe with you. Mm-hmm. You know the area, you know what you're dealing with the natural elements. So they can allow themselves to explore that side of themselves and mm-hmm. that belief piece that they can be successful at something that they thought they couldn't do before
right.
is just so important as something that will actually give you like that engine start to mm-hmm. get to the destination you want to get to. So I love that. And I also love how I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but every destination that you take somebody to, you connect with something in that local area mm-hmm. for a lesson or for that lesson. For example, I think your book highlights the eagle hunters of Mongolia. and how they have a practice that rivals great leaders in business, military, even pro sports. Can you share the connection there? Like, people wouldn't normally connect the two immediately.
Right. So in Mongolia, to the far west, there's a place called the Altai Mountains, and that's where the snow leopard is from or lives. And in that region is the Kazakh golden eagle hunters. Now, 5 years ago, there was a very famous short movie about a woman, a young huntress. She was an eagle hunter. And to become an eagle hunter from this ancient tribe, if you will, hunters, you have to be rich. I mean, that is, it's rich in the sense of money. You have to have something to be able to feed this golden eagle with. And the golden eagles get the best of all, everything. They get the best spot in their gear, right? Because they have a circular home, right? Because they are nomadic. They get the best meat. They get the best cut of the meat, etc. And the eagle hunter has to, what leadership truth I learned from them was intention. The intention of being, they're all in to become an eagle hunter because their father's generation was one. And just to get an old golden eagle, you really have to want it because it takes a lot to even get a golden eagle and then train it and then ultimately hunt with it. And the interesting thing is that the golden eagle hunters, you know, they might get a rabbit here and there and a fox here and there, but they don't make a lot off of it. They just have that intention of, I am fully stepping into what it means to be this golden eagle hunter. So how do I transition that to leadership? Well, there is a truth about you, whoever's listening now, that if someone was to speak of you to a other colleague, say, hey, I'm about to work with John or Jane Doe here. What do you know about them? And then you would say, well, they're honest, they're hardworking, or they're reactive, they're fast moving. Well, that's a truth that we could probably say about ourselves, right? Let's just say for sake of conversation, someone would say about the listener here that they're honest. Now, that is a truth that you can utilize to your advantage because once, if you make a decision on leadership through that truth, you are going to make a congruent decision. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be right all the time, but it's going to be congruent. Everyone will know that your intention is positive, his intention is to be congruent as a person, right? And I believe that when we are congruent making leadership decisions, even if we fail miserably, anyone with a basic sense of emotional intelligence will give them the benefit of the doubt. It's a real, authentic, vulnerable moment that builds relationship and most likely respect. And that's what we want in our leaders, right? We want to be able to respect our leaders. We want to be able to understand that they are human and that they do make decisions, as opposed to the person makes a decision reactionary, barks it at you, and then they fail. But guess what? When they fail, they don't own up to it. They blame somebody else. We don't want that. That's not congruent. So that's two examples of a congruence, non-congruence. And the eagle hunters have to do, they have to be all in or they'll be unsuccessful and they'll bring dishonor to their tribe or their family name.
Wow, that's very good. That's powerful. And I can see how just even that one trip, Mongolian eagle hunters, I bet are on a lot of people's bucket lists by itself. Yeah. But to come home with a piece of transformation, that's just, you know, way more than a bragging point that you can just talk about for the rest of your life.
Right.
So that's amazing. Is it different in different countries? For example, I live in Australia, and I know that this part of the world is also one of the destinations that you offer. Are there things in New Zealand, Australia that provide an environment for unique leadership lessons?
So again, I'm speaking from my experience. So maybe some listeners say, no way for what I'm about to say. I get it. I understand our experiences are different. However, I believe if you read the book about New Zealand and Australia, Eurasia, you know, on that whole continent there of Australia, New Zealand's packed into it as well. One thing I really appreciated about New Zealand and Australia, mainly Australia, is like, no worries, mate. We're all still friends. Even if you made a mistake, no worries. We're all human here. I mean, I think that's why everyone loves an Aussie. Everyone loves a Kiwi. Why? Because we don't, there's not really a lot of judgment unless you really go across the line. One thing I love about Aussies and Kiwis is that they work hard. You work really hard and you play hard. And there's not a lot of, you don't hear like in America, that person sued that company for this, or my neighbor sued me for this, or there's not a lot of sue happy going on in Australia. Why is that? Well, because no worries, mate. You communicate and we work together. Hey, you work as hard as you want, but don't encroach on my rights, because if you do, we're going to talk about it, right? So then I've always found that you guys are far more lenient and able to communicate with one another based off of that no worries, mate type of mentality, right? It's like, no worries, mate. Okay, so you're not passing judgment, so now I don't have to get defensive. Now we can have a conversation better than, you know, me yelling at you because your fence is too high in my neighborhood, or you cut me, you know, something silly, right? Because Americans are so happy. Let's be honest with each other on this podcast today. People from Philippines are very nice and welcoming. People from Africa are very, you know, we could go on the stereotypes of all kinds of things. But if you think about why you like an Aussie, you'd say, no worries, mate. I think this is a good way.
Yeah, it rings true. So I don't think anybody would disagree with you on that. Mm-hmm. But I love how your coaching seems to be not just about the open wild spaces, but the open big questions. Questions like, what do you really want out of life? I mean, most people I know, including myself, know what we don't want, but we don't really know what we do want. So I'm not sure whether you find that as well with the people that you're coaching, but what is your process for helping people figure out this kind of question?
Like you just said, you're really good at this. So what do you really want to get out of? Why do you want to be coached? Well, I don't know. Some people say, well, I know what it got me to where I am today is not going to get me where I need to go tomorrow. Okay. And that you need some kind of support, or you just need a trusted confidant that's not your spouse or a loved one or a friend or a colleague. You need somebody you can trust. And coaches, our currency in our coaching world is confidentiality, right? So you can come and tell me anything you want is just between you and I. So we could always start from a place of, well, what don't you want? And then through the coaching conversation, imagine that we build great rapport and you feel, I even hate to say the word, because in America right now, it holds a totally different idea, a safe space, right? I hold that conversation, that creation of our rapport back and forth to each other. And I would say, well, if you didn't have that, what would you do different? And people can't even go past that at first, but you work them through it with good, powerful questions. And they'll come up with, you know, they'll work through it. And it comes down to me, for example, my brother was very mean to me. He would say negative things to me all the time. So my negative voice in my back of my head, however, it's still there, but not as strong as it used to be. I can hear my brother's voice is there and I can see his face, right? For me, I could say, well, I want less of that voice and more of something else. I said, okay, well, if not your brother's voice, who would you want it to be? And I would go back to my coach that I have, who's a wonderful woman of 70-some years old now that changed my life. I want her words of, you can do it. Or even my son, like, giving me those, God, gee, Dad, you're awful strong, you know? Or, Dad, you're doing great, Dad. You got your own sticker, you know, at least 6 years old. And they think I've hit the big time because I got stickers and t-shirts. So that is an example of one end of the spectrum or another. And okay, if you had that voice of reinforcement of doing good things or something that you believe in, what might that get you in time? Well, I probably would have more of a gumption or the want to achieve this goal because I want my kids to be proud. So what I'm hearing is you don't want you want your kids to be proud of you more than you want your brother to be right. Is that correct? And then boosh, you know, the person's just like, holy shit, that's it. You know what I mean? That kind of idea. So there's a moment of aha that you say, then you as a coach, you can help that person capture it and say, okay, well, let's take this and let that propel you forward. And then again, of course, basic coaching conversations and the small incremental steps. for most things, right? For most things. So that it's sustainable, right? Over time, right? So.
Yeah. And I'm curious now, what was it for you with your own coach that you mentioned? What transformation piece did she give you? Who were you before?
Right.
What did she do for you? And then, you know.
Hey, I'm willing to go there.
What was your aha?
So honestly, my aha was that I went to her mainly because I was traveling the world so much and that I didn't have a long-term relationship, that I was incapable of having one with the opposite sex. And I thought that if I don't start working on being able to do so, I was going to end up very lonely and sad and angry, like a person in my life that was ahead of me by 15 to 20 years. I knew that I didn't want to end up like that person. Because if I keep going down that road, yeah, I'm going to have all kinds of stories and I'm going to have all kinds of toys. You know, I'll have a Harley this and I'll have this cabin over here and I'll be able to go do this when I want, etc. But in the end, I will be very lonely. And I didn't want that. Yeah. She helped me to understand why I kept moving around, but also why it was important for me to have that relationship that really mattered. And frankly, shortly thereafter, I had those moments and I worked on it. Once I met those milestones that I knew that I could be in a long-term relationship, that even if the hunting season of Alaska took me away for 3 months or 55 days in the bush, coming back, I could still create that relationship worth lasting. And honestly, you brought it up, I'll tell you straight up, shortly thereafter, I did meet my wife and I met her and I knew that this woman was different than all others and that behaviors in the past were not going to work for a long-term relationship. So I just applied what I learned. So for example, I had our first 2 dates were date dates. You know, we went out and met for coffee and that's how it all started. And we married within 16 months, give or take. And now we have 2 wonderful boys, 6 and 9. We've been married 11, we'll be married 11 years in October. And I write about her in my book, in Legacy, the last chapter of my book.
Amazing. I applaud that because it's easy just to stick with what we know. Mm-hmm. Hard work is when you decide that something needs to change and you actually do something about it and you seek help. Mm-hmm. And that's not easy for anyone to do. Not all people find that easy.
Right. And I knew I couldn't find that in my friends. My friends were not going to support me on being someone who was going to settle down into a relationship that is a positive quality relationship, if you will. They're going to be like, yeah, okay, Greenie, you do whatever you got to do, man. You live the life that we all want to have. You know, you go to Alaska for 55 days in the bush, and then you come out with a fistful of money, and then you travel the world and do all these crazy things. Why would you want to give that up, you know? So I knew deep down inside there was something more inside me, and a coach supports that. Even if I didn't know what it was, I knew I couldn't find it unless I spoke to somebody who creates that space to allow that conversation to flow, to be able to have those aha moments and be able to transition that power of that moment into a sustainable behaviors or thought process that allows you to do that.
I love this whole process of just entrepreneurship in terms of who you become in order to be that person. And, you know, grown men cry on your trips for good reason.
That's true.
And I'm sure there are some...
And women.
Common... Yes, it's true. What are some common... is there a human thread, a human story that's common to all these people who come to you for coaching?
They just want to like themselves and be okay with themselves. And I am so... I mean, I get emotional about it because I just think about... I mean, that's a great question and no one's ever asked me. And they just want to be, they just want to be able to like themselves.
That's profound.
I write about it in the book with Ian, the main character. He's honestly out there because he's a composite, by the way. He's a composite of many coaching conversations. So it's just not one individual that you can figure out who it is if you lived in my area at the time. It's a composite, but he really realized that, you know what, I'm not being a great father nor a husband. Why? Because I'm chasing the next big thing. You know, he aerospace company. He went from one company. Now he's in charge of six, or he was in charge of three, never home. He's always chasing that. What he's chasing, he realized, and I'm not kidding you, sobbing. It's a sobbing experience. He's just letting it all out to realize that that has been the wrong thing. And then he makes a commitment to himself so he could like himself to go off and be the father. And frankly, I mean, to be honest with you, I still work with him. And one of the adventure coaching experiences that I support or I do, he brought his daughter. And it was a huge, very, very, very profound and very powerful experience for his daughter, who is 15 years old, going on 27, like all parents say at that age. And they connected, and it brought tears to people's eyes when they saw it. You know, because we did an adventure coaching session where I take people and take them to do Spartan races or Tough Mudders. You might be familiar with that. It's an obstacle course. But what our job is not to get each other through. We focus on a para athlete, somebody in a wheelchair, or somebody that has only crutches, their legs don't work, or they are blind. And we have to get them from point A, from the start of this Spartan race, if you will, all the way to the end safely. So we're not focused on my needs, or we're focused on everybody's needs, but we're focused on that person's experience. And through that, we all benefit. And it's a very, very powerful experience. And his daughter and him came together, and he still calls me and thanks me. Anytime I talk to him, he still says the same thing. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I go, I didn't do it. I just created the opportunity for you to do what you believe is right.
Mike, what's the wildest thing you've done experience-wise with a mentee?
In my estimation, or theirs, because you get off the helicopter, you in the bush of Alaska, you think there's a bear behind every bush. For me, what's the wildest experience? That's a really good question. Part of me wants to be very profound here. Physically, I would say I have taken people into sub-zero temperatures for days on end from a person from Texas, which is in the south of the United States, to Alaska when it's minus 20 out with the sun shining. So it's about minus 10, give or take. On snow machines. That's pretty wild when you take somebody who's totally physically, their body is like screaming, what the are you doing to me, right? I've run with the bulls with clients before, so that's fun in Pamplona, you know, and I've done it with a Pena, so it's legit. It's not just, you know, just run with the bulls. I run with a Pena that teaches you why it's so important to do this. Why are we doing it? What is respectful? What is really running with, the keyword with, not in front of, not behind, but with them. So there's a powerful metaphor there. So that'll probably be it. You know, I've had a lot of people think, what the F are we doing here? You know, and I just say, just keep one foot in front of the other. We're going to make it. Yeah, so that's probably that. I mean, I'm also, maybe your listeners not going to like what I'm about to say, but that's okay. I'm all right with that. I've been a big game hunting guide in Alaska for many, many years, and bear hunting is pretty boring until you get to the opportunity to harvest that bear, right? And the state of Alaska keeps track of all their animals pretty very well, so it's not we're just like killing bears for just killing bears. We actually can go on forever about this, but hunting a bear is very, very, very intense for about 15% of the whole 100% of the experience.
Wow, there's leadership lessons in hunting bears?
Well, first of all, I'm just going to say as a disclaimer, hunting a boar, a male bear, saves a bunch of other bears because male bears, what do they want to do? They want to sow their seed. So if you, older bear, mature bear, 7 to 10 years of age, he wants to do as much as he can to sow his seed, right? To impregnate another sow, right? Okay, a female. But sometimes he comes across a sow with cubs. But then bring her back into her ability to be fertile, he has to kill those bears so that she does no longer makes milk, but she goes back into her cycle. So he'll kill the cubs in order to get the female to do that. So that's a long, it's a very, very short experience. But that's why hunting bears supports the population. Anyway, I know you're probably going to get all kinds of emails. Maybe even I'll get emails, but that's fine. I'm willing to talk to people about it. But there is a leadership metaphor. You have to wait, and you have to pay your dues in order to glass, meaning sit up on the side of a mountain and wait and look for them, set up an area where you can do it safely and do it in a respectful manner, right? We don't bait any bears. We don't do that in the sense of baiting them with honey or baiting them with, I can't believe I said honey, but we could use, some people do, some people use syrup, some people use Dunkin' Donuts, you name it. So there's a metaphor that you have to wait for your opportunity to do it respectfully and then act on it when the time is right.
I just had a comedic moment in my mind where I'm thinking of a bear who, you know, would not have thought that the death of him could be because of a Dunkin' Donut.
Yeah. Well, think about it. At least in America, have you been in America lately? A lot of people eat them, and we're one of the most obese nations on the planet, right? Because of Dunkin' Donuts or things like that. I mean, I don't drink coffee, and I very rarely eat donuts, but
you're fixing that, right?
Good.
You're fixing that, right? Yeah. There's an education piece that seems to be slowly making its way, and more people are making the healthier
better decisions.
So it might be slow. America's a big country, but it's addressing it. So that's really good to see. Your book highlights seven truths for leaders through seven countries in your amazing book, Wonder Must. Is it a process where you take someone to one location and they learn all seven truths, or do you just home in on one or two truths that, you know, the most important thing that they need to learn? I'm just trying to get where you can take people.
Well, the book starts with Ian and I in a helicopter in the state of Alaska going out to the bush. And then the book is basically a travel log / leadership memoir. As I'm coaching Ian, you and the reader is experiencing how I'm coaching Ian, his background and things. I go back into time about how I got to that continent, that one of seven continents, how I got there. What's the leadership truth that I discovered? And now how do I apply it to my life? So basically the book is designed, although I didn't do it, to be honest with you, 100% transparent, I didn't design it to be this way. At least I didn't. You laugh, you cry, you self-reflect, and then you want to give that book to somebody else. And why do I say what I just said about I didn't design? I just wanted to tell my story, and it just happened to come out that way where some people say it's a kick in the stomach, but it's really highly entertaining. They couldn't put it down because it makes you self-reflect. What are your truths? You know, if I asked any of your listeners right now, what are your truths about leadership or living your life? You might be giving me one or two, maybe three. But if I asked you to give me seven, you might be hard pressed. And then that's through self-reflection. Do you gain that? But why seven? Well, I've been to every continent and I've worked on every continent. So that helps.
Yeah. So seven makes sense. Do you have to be pretty fit to do one of your adventure coaching stints?
A great question. I just put it up on my website. Frequently asked questions. That's the number one question. Do I have to be fit? No, you don't have to be fit. However, I do ask that you prepare for our time together. You get to choose what outdoor activity we do. If you want to sea kayak, we sea kayak. If you want to go fish world-class trout or grayling or char, we do that. If you want to hike in the mountains, we do that. If you want to spike out, meaning just camp with a tent for 6 days, we do that. I literally had have a deposit in my bank account today from a 71-year-old man that wants to come up and base himself out in the bush and then just come back to a cabin every night. He wants to do different peaks and just experience Alaska. So no, you don't, but I'm going to ask you to mentally prepare, physically prepare for whatever physical activity we do, whether it be fly fishing, because fly fishing takes a lot of strength in your right arm if you're right-handed, right?
Yeah, you do this for teams as well. How does this work with teams? I mean, what can they learn from this experience? Because so far we've been talking about a solo experience and what, you know, the transformation piece with one person. But how do you do this transformation for a whole team?
Okay. For a whole team, similar model, if you will. The leadership team comes to Alaska or wherever, or I come to you, and we go out in your local area or whatever have you, and you have an intention. Some leadership teams, most leadership teams that come to me do their annual retreat where they look back at what they did well and what they're going to do going forward. that's their model. But well, when they arrive, I say, okay, what's currently working for you guys? And then we'll figure it out, because we'll do work in the morning and do hikes in the afternoon or whatever in the afternoon, some activity, or we'll flip it. We'll whatever. But when we get to do that work, I ask them individually to come prepared to doing what's one thing they're going to do differently. What's one thing they're going to start, stop, or continue? So there's three things I ask of them as individuals. And then I say collectively, I'm going to ask you to come to gain alignment on how you're going to go into the future. It's the basic model of current state, future state. Somewhere in the middle, we got to go do some hard work. So for sake of conversation, let's just say in the morning, they say, you know what? We're done not being transparent as a leadership team to the people below us. Usually they make big decisions and it comes out 4 or 5 months later, or they don't even tell why we're going to do something. And they decide they're going to do that. I say, okay, great. The current state is this. The future state's that. As we hike today, think about how you as an individual, can support that, be more transparent to our whole company or our whole leadership team or whatever have you. Then we work through it. And then I, you know, not using a whiteboard, but I use my journal. I keep track of it, or I have a scribe and we keep track of it and make sure. Then we make action steps, et cetera. The typical coaching conversation. But what makes it even more powerful is just like they all had that experience that day of that climbing that mountain. I said, well, how does this refer to your team goal of being more transparent? Some of you in this around this campfire didn't think it was possible that even you or the person next to you could make it or could make a contribution. But we all made it safely. So how are we going to do that going forward in regards to this transparency? And some people will be naysayers and some people say, hey, yeah, we could do it. And we work through all of those different. So we propose what they're going to do, and then we check, and then we re-propose, and then we just go forward.
Yeah, and I think there's also something in being in an environment that is a heightened experience that lets you go into the deeper questions. And, you know, instead of arriving at superficial conclusions and say, yep, that box is ticked, because it is so easy to do. It's like, you know, companies can just say, okay, team building exercise, just tick the box, send these guys off to an activity for the day and come back and, you know, they're all smiles and you think, well, job done.
Yeah.
You know,
kumbaya.
Yeah, exactly. But I think I love how, you know, you're asking for more, like, you know, get not just out, but out there. You know, and let's arrive at, you know, asking the deeper questions, arriving at deeper answers or better, more quality answers that will actually give your team that transformation piece that sometimes we say we're looking for, but we actually don't really do a whole lot about, or we're not putting really the investment in terms of time, money, and actual thinking and processing behind it. So I love that. And I also love the first quote in your book, which is by Kurt Hahn, the founder of Outward Bound, which I believe is the company that kind of was key in starting your journey in all of this, which is, he said, there is more to us than we know. If we can be made to see it, perhaps for the rest of our lives, we will be unwilling to settle for less. And I think it's so true. We love being within the boundaries of what's safe and comfortable. But if we only saw our potential, we would not be settling for less. We'd be restless until we got there.
Right. And then once we got there, we were like, but this is not really the whole process. It's about the journey of that whole experience. Now what? Not necessarily now what, but what did we learn here? How can we apply it to the next thing, right? While staying congruent on the things that really matter to you. And that's another kind of coaching question that could be forever be answered. Like, what's important? Well, health. You could drill down to, why do you want health? Why want to be around with my kids as long as possible, or something like that. So, I agree with you. I'm honored to be that person that people believe in, support. I mean, I've worked all around the world, and now the only reason I'm here in Alaska is because my wife and I haven't been coming here for 25 years. We wanted to raise our boys here for various reasons, and my wife and I've made good decisions that I can literally work Zoom, or I can go down to lower 48, or go to Colombia in December to work with clients. So I'm grateful for that aspect. Why did it happen? Why am I grateful? Well, because I was congruent and making decisions based off of what's important to me and my other stakeholder, that being my wife, because we focused on what really is the truth. And there's that congruence again, right? We make decisions based off what do we really want? Do we want our kids to be raised in an environment? And I'm not saying anything negative against any of this. We want our kids to learn Alaska self-sufficiency because we believe that that is going to serve them better than busyness in a place like Boulder, Colorado, which I love that town and I have great friends there or whatever have you. But there, they don't learn that self-sufficiency, like learning how to build a fire with flint and steel, like my son just did the other night for all of us. There's value in that, we believe, and we want our kids to be raised in an environment where you have to be physically and emotionally tough. Like, you know, my son play hockey outside, you know, they don't have practice indoors. So if it's minus 20, they still practice. It's minus 21, they don't practice. But that's just what works for us. That's God's honest truth.
There may be days they may be praying for minus 21, just that 1 degree difference, and I get to stay in bed. Yeah. That is me, and I need work. But I mean, you are ahead in terms of achieving that congruency and activating your life out of that place. Do you, you know, up to this point, your whole story, it sounds like it was your restlessness that kind of led you to where you are now. Do you find yourself still restless for some things, or is it actually a thing that you arrive at a place where you feel like congruency is the thing that I've achieved and now it's just time to give back? You've arrived at your ceiling and that's a good place. I'm just wondering what that space looks like.
So if I understand your question is, it sounds like, Mike, that you've lived a thread of being restless and that's allowed you to have the life you have. And now that you're where you are you still restless or are you happy where you are? Is that correct?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So all the coaches in the audience are like, yeah, way to go, Mike. Great question. Way to make sure you understand. Check for understanding. I'm going to say, to be honest with you, my wife said to me last night, you don't have to conquer everything. So there are things that I really want to do as an individual. Me as an individual, Mike Green as an individual, when I don't think of Mike Green as a father, husband, neighbor, et cetera. But collectively, congruently, I am very, very content where I am right now. I drive my boys to school. We pick them up, right? Although my wife's picking them up today. But I'm home with them far more than I ever was at the beginning of part of their lives. I was working an average of 19 days a month away from home before I had that moment where I had to ask myself, what is this angst or anger or this unsettledness trying to teach you or ask you? Now, that's a very good question. I hope that your listeners remember that question. So basically, I was feeling this kind of angst when I got home after 19 days of being away. I should be very elated and excited, but I had this angst. I can only describe it as an angst. So I asked that coaching question. What is it that this angst is trying to teach you or ask you? And it came to me just like that in a big booming voice. It said, what are you providing? I'm in Boulder, Colorado, living at the Boulder Country Club. My truck is paid off. My wife's car is almost paid off. A huge house on the 9th tee. Everybody would say, you're providing pretty well, Mike. But my answer was a resounding nothing. Something had to change. I was not being congruent. So that was the moment for me. And that only happened about probably 7 years ago, give or take. I have to really think it through. So I'm happy now because I am providing the boys opportunities to learn what hard work is, opportunities to learn how important being a good neighbor is, importance about self-reliance. So I am in a good place. So that's kind of a long answer, but I really appreciate your question.
No, thank you for sharing that. That was so honest. And I think that's something that a lot of people wonder. It's like, how long is this journey? Like, will I ever arrive?
Right.
So that was really good to know. What do you wish more people knew about their potential?
That the potential is limitless if they just believe in themselves a little bit more each day. For example, I can only walk. I can't even run. I'm not asking you to run. I can't walk more than 100 meters without having to stop. Okay, great. Well, that's, you can go 101 tomorrow, then you can go 102 the next day, and then eventually you'll start learning that, what other things can I do if I just gave myself small incremental opportunities for change, right?
Yeah, because sometimes it's doing the thing that you invite them to do, which is put a huge pause on your life and just do something very drastically different. But then there are also things in your everyday space where you can start. And the challenge, I guess, is to get ourselves to stop being so busy, or at least give ourselves that little bit of margin, mm-hmm. that 15% margin in our day to work on these things. Mm-hmm. So that's great. Your book is Wander Must, which is a very clever title. I thought everybody should get it.
Thank you.
If there was a book, though, that changed your life that you would recommend to other leaders, what would that be?
Other than the book I referred to in my book, I will say, without a doubt, Dr. Doug Brackman's book called Driven has been a huge, huge owner's manual type book for a driven individual like me. If you're driven and you lay in bed at night and you think of all the things you did that day, you check them off in a mental check marks, and then you think about what you're going to do tomorrow, Driven by Dr. Doug Brackman is the best book for you or your spouse that is suffering because you're so driven. Because I read it and I was like, oh my God, someone understands me. This is like the owner's manual. And I give it to my wife. I go, please, please just read this book. It'll explain everything. And it did. I'm not kidding you. It's God's honest truth. I've read the book twice, and I had the honor to be on this podcast a little while ago. And yeah, he talks about the neuroscience of people who are driven and why it's important. And you mentioned it several times at the beginning of our podcast about we want to be safe because that's how we continue to live, right? And although there's people out there back in those days that had to go out and to provide for the community or for their family, those were the driven ones. They said, well, I guess it's going to be me, so I better get out there and get the job accomplished, whether it be bringing food back, et cetera. Only until we stopped being hunters and we became farmers did we really even make that even stronger for a whole community or for our whole physiology. I'm not going to get into it, but the book is fascinating. If you're driven, it's going to alleviate a lot of your drive. It'll help you understand yourself. And if you're married to somebody or you have a friend or a boss that is like that, and you're like, get the book for them. And for you, first you read it and then give it for them.
Well, we'll put the links to that book as well as your book and the links to how people can find out more about you. But yeah, Driven is like a perfect description for you. But I think in everybody, there is a little bit of drive. Otherwise, we'd be dead, right? There is a little bit of drive, you know, like that gap that we want to close, things that we're not happy with ourselves. And that great observation that you shared earlier that people just want to like themselves. And it's that those gaps that we want to close. So I appreciate your time for, you know, just sharing with us. And once we have that awareness piece of ourselves, we know what we need to work on. So thank you. How can people best connect with you directly? Is that through your website?
Yeah. My website is MikeGreenLeadership.com. I just keep it simple. Mike Green, G-R-E-E-N, leadership.com.
Mike, thank you so much for your time. I feel like I've traveled the globe a little bit the last hour. It's been fascinating. And, you know, we'll keep watching your work and hearing your story. So thank you.
I'm grateful to you. And if I may give a shout out to the wonderful people of Australia, you're always so kind to me. At the time, my fiance, my wife, you really were great. Mainland the Gold Coast from Haast all the way down to Adelaide. I'm grateful. So thank you so much, people of Australia.
And hey, thanks for listening. I do appreciate it. And for this episode, I'd like to give a special shout out to one listener in particular. And that's Natalie Key from Malaysia, who has been tuning in since day one of this podcast almost 2 years ago now. Natalie, you're a legend. I appreciate you and I hope you keep listening. And to everyone, if you enjoyed the chat, I would love a rating and review for this show on the podcast player you're using. And click the follow button if you'd like to be notified when a new episode drops. By the way, if you ever wanted to start a podcast, I have links to the show notes to some of my favorite tools, including Amazon gift cards and discounts. And if you need a hand to find out how to use these tools, reach out and say hello at uponarrivalpodcast@gmail.com. I'll be back soon to uncover more stories and strategies for a successful future. Till then, cheers.